Good evening.
No, I'm not in your district anyway.
Welcome, folks. I'd like to call to order the March 5th, 2019 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Would you join me in the pledge to the flag, please?
I pledge to the flag of the United States of America, and to your republic, which stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Ms. Black?
Here.
Ms. Champion?
Here.
Mr. Granison? Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Ms. Corman?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
I am present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
We have 12 members present.
I'm delighted that we have a special occasion. Well, as special as we do it here, we do proclamations. We call that a special occasion. We'd like to welcome Kathy Zoner here and for a proclamation from the legislature. And I'd like to ask Shauna Black and Annie Corman to come up to the microphone. And Ms. Zoner, would you join them, please? Thank you so much for being here. Come on up. And thanks to Annie and Kath and Shauna for writing what they're about to read. Get the stage management right, guys. Come on.
Thank you, Chair Robertson. I am honored to help present this proclamation honoring my good friend of over 20 years, Kathy Zoner. In her personal life, Kathy has always been there for me and all of her friends and family through thick and thin. She is extremely generous and selfless, always putting others' welfare before her own. In her professional life, Chief Zoner has been a role model for everyone, especially women and children. After the proclamation, your family and your guests are welcome to come back for a couple of snacks, and the legislature, we can eat the leftovers later. And before Sean and I read this proclamation, I just wanted to let you know that there was a lot of great stuff about Kathy that we had to take out to make the proclamation fit on this one page. For instance, one awesome section that I wrote read, "Whereas now that Kathy will have a less demanding job, she will have more time to repair her truck so that it will be in working order when her good friends want to borrow it."
That was not in the first draft, but okay.
It was there. And since she's Ann Corman's constituent, she'll have plenty of time to help her campaign for re-election in 2021. Well, enough about me. Now I'm going to hand it over to Legislator Vice Chair Shauna Black to read the first half of our proclamation.
Thanks, Annie. Recognizing and thanking Kathy Zoner for her years of service to the Cornell University community and Tompkins County residents. Whereas Kathy Zoner is a graduate of Ohio State University and the FBI National Academy and began working at Cornell in 1991 as a dispatcher and steadily rose through the ranks of Cornell's police department, including serving as a patrol officer, sergeant, special projects manager, lieutenant, captain, assistant director, and was then promoted to deputy police chief in 2007. And whereas in 2009, Kathy Zoner was sworn in as the first woman to serve as the Cornell police chief and oversaw 50 sworn peace officers, protecting and serving the Cornell community of over 20,000 students and over 9,000 staff members, taking the time to mentor staff members and many students. And whereas Kathy Zoner has dedicated her career to the safety of the Cornell community and has developed an exceptional campus police force that is diverse and inclusive. And whereas, according to Joanne DiStefano, Cornell Executive Vice President and CFO, KZ, as many of her friends and coworkers call her, has been a steady, clear-sighted leader, serving with compassion and integrity, grounded in the belief that a police force that is accessible to the communities it serves can help prevent violence and create an environment of safety and respect. And whereas KZ has always been front and center in handling difficult situations carefully and in rallying those around her to think in preventative terms about keeping people safe, said Mary Opperman, Vice President and Chief Human Resources Officer, and she created the Blue Light Safety email, which updates the campus community on situations of concern and promotes campus safety, and whereas under her leadership, Cornell became, in 2010, the first university in New York to be accredited by the International Association of Campus Law Enforcement Administrators.
Whereas, as an active resident of Tompkins County, KZ served on the Ithaca Rape Crisis Board for more than 10 years, the majority of that time as president of its board of directors, and chaired the local law enforcement leaders organization, the Tompkins-Cortland Law Enforcement Administrators Group. And whereas Kathy Zoner was awarded the Michael Padula Award in 2003 by the Tompkins County Human Rights Commission for her efforts in collaborations with the Cornell and Ithaca communities. And whereas in 2014, Kathy's expertise on reducing campus sexual assault was nationally recognized when she was asked to participate in a Washington, D.C. roundtable discussion and testified before the U.S. Senate. And whereas Kathy Zoner retires from Cornell, or as she retires from Cornell, she has taken a new role as Director of Organizational Assessments at a professional services firm that consults on safety and security needs for K through 12 schools, universities, and colleges throughout the United States. Now, therefore, be it resolved that members of the Tompkins County Legislature hereby extends our deepest appreciation to Kathy Zoner for her 27 years of dedicated service to Cornell University and the residents of Tompkins County. We have one little surprise.
Shauna and Annie, thank you so much. I'd like to introduce Sheriff Derek Osborne.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you for letting me jump on board and being a part of this. I will say when I was elected sheriff, one of the people I was most looking forward to working with again was you, Kathy. And although I'm very happy for you and your retirement, I'm very disappointed and sad for myself. You truly were a partner to the Sheriff's Office for many, many years. You left Cornell a much better place than it was when you got there, I'm sure of it. And Tompkins County and the Sheriff's Office will greatly miss you. You're a friend. You're welcome back anytime. You can stop and see me. I hope you do. And, you know, when I ordered this plaque, the picture made it look a lot bigger, as often happens. So it's a little small, but this is just a small token of my appreciation and that of the Sheriff's Office. And thank you.
Chief Zoner, would you like to say a few words?
Well, sure.
Good. Thank you.
I want to thank the legislature and the sheriff for doing this recognition. I think it's wonderful. I also I feel a little bit like of an imposter because I'm not the only one doing all these things. I have a lot of support. A lot of that support remains behind, and I'm anxious and hopeful that it continues to keep going the way we've helped to grow it. So I appreciate all the efforts that built the support that allowed me to be the focus of this particular celebration. And I was telling Derek, I said, I'm really grateful for the small plaque because 27 years of law enforcement leaves me not a whole lot of wall space in my home office. So this will be perfect. And thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Kathy, for everything. We appreciate it. All right, that's wonderful to celebrate somebody's accomplishments and also to know that you're not just going off to play golf. So. Great, thank you. And I think we heard the first re-election announcement for the 2021 election season. So Ann Corman is going to run for re-election. Just everybody sign up. All right. Are there any members of the public who would like to address the legislature? Do we have any blue forms? No, everybody's here to party? Okay, have a good time. Thank you all for coming. That's great. All right, no members of the public? All right, thank you very much. I'm going to pretend I'm Kathy Servaz for a minute. She sent, George McGonigal sent all of us a message with a number of updates from the city, and I forwarded that this afternoon. I can find that and read it if you want. But Kathy Servaz from Town of Dryden was planning to come this afternoon. She wasn't able to make it, but she said, please express my apologies for not being able to attend, and she wanted me to read the following. Updates from Dryden. On February 21st, 2019, the town board approved the adoption of a local law enacting the New York State Real Property Tax Law, Section 4467J, restricted sale price exemption for housing trust houses. So the first municipality outside the city and the school district that has adopted that exemption so that our housing trust properties will see the benefit of a lower price on their homes if they're in the town of Dryden. The section of the town of Dryden that's in the Ithaca School District then can take full advantage of that benefit. The Dryden School District, which is about two-thirds of the town, that's another initiative that we'll need to, that's not in her message, this is me. But congratulations to the town for doing that. At the same meeting, the town board approved updates to the zoning law that referenced LEED standards, making them relevant and current. The planning board has established a building energy committee that will work on proposed amendments to the comprehensive plan as it relates to sustainable energy use in the town. The meetings are held every other Monday at 11 a.m. at Dryden Town Hall. And the town, I guess there are two more things. Okay, the town was awarded the 2019 G. Jeffrey Haber Leadership Award from New York State Workers' Compensation Alliance at the Association of Towns Conference in February. The town was given the award because staff goes, quote, above and beyond in regards to safety and loss control efforts and sets an example for the rest of our membership, end quote. The town board congratulated Highway Superintendent Rick Young as the award was given to us because of the policies and procedures he has put in place to ensure the safety of DPW crews. And the Rail Trail Task Force is planning a grand opening event on May 11th for the portion of the trail that's open between the Village of Dryden and the Village of Freeville. Speakers, raffles, and entertainment, et cetera, are planned, so keep an eye out for updates. That's May 11th. So if there are any questions, Mike can answer them.
With pleasure.
Any questions about any of that? Maybe we would be able to put an answer together. All right. Thank you very much. I don't see any other municipal official. Nobody hiding in the corners? All right. Legislator, privilege of the floor. All right. Moving on. Any legislators? Annie.
I just had a question, kind of. I talked to Mike Hall about getting a tour of the airport and just wondered, want to take a head count of folks that might want to go on a tour to see what how the construction's going. So at least a couple. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'll include folks.
Great idea. Thanks, Annie. Shauna.
Yeah, I'd just like to announce I'm the liaison for the Youth Services Department, and we're happy to announce that the second annual pitch program will take place March 13th. 10 different youth groups have applied for the funding. As a county, we have allocated $20,000 for this contest, and the youth groups will be presenting the programming throughout the day, and I will actually be one of the judges. And everyone is welcome to attend the award ceremony that will take place March 13th at 7 p.m. at Hotel Ithaca.
Thanks, Shauna. Anna.
Just one update or one piece of
or an invitation, as it were, the liaison to the Downtown Ithaca Alliance. I have been, continue to be this year, and the annual event, annual dinner for the DIA is this Thursday night. That starts at 5:30. They do have seats open. It is always an incredible event with wonderful speakers, very informative, from issues of social justice to workforce development to increasing the vibrancy of the downtown community. So it's a wonderful event just to understand a little bit more about what the Downtown Ithaca Alliance does for the community. So I welcome everybody. If you want information on the tickets, and it's also open to the public. So anybody watching, you can contact me or you can reach out to the Downtown Ithaca Alliance, and I hope to see you there.
Thanks, Anna. Annie?
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Leslin.
That's all right.
You can yeah. Sure. No, Leslin was next.
Okay. I actually just want to thank Shauna and Ann for bringing that resolution honoring Kathy's owner. We don't often do that for folks who are not working for Tompkins County, and I think that was absolutely beautiful and well-deserved. So thank you all very, very much. Kathy has done incredible work, not just on Cornell campus, but also within this community, and built a lot of allies and shared a lot of knowledge, has helped many of us take charge of issues that we wouldn't have known how to do. So I do want to publicly thank her personally as well. I also want to remind all of you, particularly my sister friends, that next Thursday, March 14th, is the annual Women's History Month Sister Friends event. Happy Women's History Month, by the way. At Ithaca College, beginning at 10 o'clock, Women's Market, and a luncheon with performances, and just a time for about 400 women or folks who identify as women to come and have great fellowship with each other. Again, this is not an exclusive event. We never say men cannot attend. I say the same thing every year. Just know that you will be in the company of 400 wonderful, wonderful women of all ages. It's intergenerational. So just a reminder to folks to get your tickets. It's $20. It's been $20 for all of the years we've done it. This is our 16th year of hosting Sister Friends, and I dare say it is the single largest event in Tompkins County honoring Women's History Month. So please get your tickets. They're on sale at GF, $20. Or you can see Martha, because I think she has tickets too. And come on down. Have a good time.
That's right. Everybody. So there still are some tickets left?
There are still tickets left. One of the things that we do at many of these events, whether it's the Diversity Consortium Roundtable or even at Sister Friends, is that we try to find ways to promote the county and promote county employment. So we put in the little swag bags, because there's got to be a swag bag at a, you know, Sister Friends event, a chocolate mint that carries the WDIC logo and speaks of Tompkins County. So we encourage people, you know, to learn more about our county as well.
As the sweet and refreshing place that we are, we have a mint, yes. And thanks to the staff for putting the stickers on. So my tickets were all taken up, but we're going to have a good contingent from Tompkins County. So.
That would be beautiful.
Okay. I think I had Annie and then Amanda.
Thank you. I have my ticket already for Sister Friends, and I didn't know about the chocolate swag bag, so done it anyway. I just was looking at my calendar. I just wanted to just report on a couple of different activities that I went to recently since our last meeting, and one was the Ag and Farmland Workshop, and that was well attended. We also learned a lot about soil health and no-till farming, and so that was very productive. The workshop or the seminar that Dr. Clark organized called Living in a Climate of Hate at the BorgWarner Library
last week was standing room only. They had the whole large room, and it was standing room only, and there was we had a lot of good feedback, so I'm hoping that'll be something that goes forward as another type of seminar to have. So thank you.
Thanks, Annie. Amanda, then Mike.
Thank you. I would just like to announce the Environmental Management Council's public event is happening next Tuesday, the 12th at 5:30 at the library. The topic is the Green New Deal. I'm not sure who the speaker is, but I'm sure it will be a very interesting event. So you're all welcome. It's a public event to learn more about that topic and the EMC in general. Thanks.
Thanks, Amanda. Mike Lane.
A few nights ago, had the privilege of going to the presentation by the Office of Human Rights, the panel discussion at the Tompkins County Public Library. For those of you who didn't see it, you missed an excellent program. There were, seven speakers talked about all kinds of discriminatory things that are going on, Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, racism, homophobia. Our own Ann Corman was one of the speakers, did a great job. It was serious. The audience was engaged. And I think it was a real kudo for our Office of Human Rights and the leadership of our interim director over there, Reverend Ken. And I wanted to say I was glad I went, and I hope they do things like that in the future. It's the kind of education that they should be bringing forth to our community.
Thank you, Mike. Anybody else? All right. For my report, I think I will take a couple of minutes and talk about the meetings that a few of us had in Albany this past a week ago, the 26th of February. Rich and Jason Molino and I went, and we had a number of meetings with met with Senator Helming, Pam Helming, with Senator Jim Seward. We had a meeting with Senator Tom O'Mara, but he got stuck on a plane that was canceled. So we met with his legislative counsel. We raised a whole number of issues with them that, you know, I've sent you information about those. We also met with the second floor with Kelly Cummings, the Director of State Operations, Dale Brick, the new Deputy Director of Energy and Environment. I should say Shauna was going to come with us, but she went and got a fever that day, so she didn't join us. So the meeting on the second floor was primarily with Kelly and Dale, and then Cara Grippen also, who's our regional representative, but has also kind of moved up to be the intergovernment affairs connection in Albany. And also met with the staff and chair of the judiciary committees, the chair of the Judiciary Committee in the Assembly, Jeffrey Dinowitz, and the chief of staff for the Senate Judiciary Chair, Brad Hoylman. So the judiciary issue was about the third county court that a number of people have been working on for a very long time. Andrea Bentley, who's with the 6th Judicial District, Judge Elizabeth Gary's office, she joined us for those meetings, and that was very, very helpful. So the issue, as you know, is to try to get a third court so that people can move more quickly through the criminal justice system and not sit in jail for 6 months waiting for a trial date. We have amazingly dedicated judges in the county, but they have a caseload of, for each one, more than 300 cases kind of in their, on the waiting list, so to speak. So we've been pushing hard on this. I'm pleased to say that the Court of Claims direction is moving forward. Also, there are two kind of paths. We've talked about this before. The Court of Claims is where local attorneys apply. There's a rigorous application and interview process. And then the governor would appoint somebody to that. The other process is through the legislative route. That would get us an elected county judge. So they're slightly different routes, but we've been advised to go both ways. So that's kind of what we're doing. One of the key points was how much will this cost, and if it goes through the legislative route, would there be something put into the budget? And got an email today of a very strong letter from Barbara Lifton. Her staff had gotten had gotten an estimate from the Office of Court Administration. We've been waiting for that. We didn't have that. So approximately $1.1 million for this court, that's for the judge, and no fewer than 7 support staff for one judge, as it was listed out for us. So the salary and benefits for this position, for this new court. So hers was a very strong letter to Speaker Carl Hasty asking that that be put into the budget. And I will send that tomorrow to Tom O'Mara, who is, he's actually the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee, so that's a strong position. So we will ask him to do the same with Leader Stuart Cousins. So those are pieces that really had to move along. And in advance of the Assembly and the Senate doing their one-house budgets, which we expect they will probably settle on by next week. So it's really timely and really important that Barbara was able to get this number for us and write that letter, and we'll complete the circle with the Senate as well. I think the work that we've done with the second floor has gotten us to where if they pass it, he'll sign it. No promises, but I think we've really gotten that message across. So that's one issue there. We also talked about the AIM funding, the idea of the AIM, the aid and incentives to municipalities, the cuts that the governor proposed in his original budget, and then in his 30-day amendment, said, okay, we'll restore those cuts. We'll take it out of the county sales tax that we expect might come from internet sales tax, which hasn't been passed yet, but he's already dedicated some of our money to somebody else. So we made a big push in opposition to that and heard from everybody that we talked to that, yeah, they didn't like that idea very much. So I would be surprised, very surprised, if the One House bills include that. I think they will just restore the money. That's my guess. Richie, you can certainly chime in here and correct or add, you know, as you...
No, it was a good trip in terms of trying to get a sense of how Albany is thinking about us, if they think about us at all. But I thought we had really good conversations and we stated our position. Hopefully some of it sticks, and particularly the additional court position, which would do us just loads of good.
And then the meetings on the second floor was an update on the airport for one thing, and then sort of and on where we are with NYSEG and the non-pipe alternative, and kind of wrap that whole initiative into the governor's proposal for a Green New Deal, and making a case that, hey, we could be like your model, your pilot project, your model example of how a community can push forward with economic development at the same time as moving away from fossil fuels, and making a strong case that that is very much what Westchester is in the middle of, just being faced with a moratorium in real time right now, saying that we're kind of a couple years ahead of them and we could be an example there. So we're hoping something comes of that. Another issue, the home rule legislation that we are seeking on affordable housing. We presented that in all these meetings as well. And then on Friday, I met Barbara Lifton, said, well, she can squeeze me in for a half an hour. So I went over across the street and sat with her about a number of these issues, but in particular also about the affordable housing measure, said that it had gone through committee. We were going to vote on it tonight. If you remember that went through the Senate. It didn't actually pass the Senate. It was introduced into the Senate. It was introduced into the Assembly, but got stuck in committee last year. And that led us to Jonathan's wild goose chase with the Comptroller's Office and the Attorney General's Office. So I gave her the memo that Jonathan wrote in January, And I'm hoping that we can get that move forward. We do have NYSAC involved in that as well. So that's another issue where her voice is going to be really critical in encouraging the local governments committee to vote on it and pass it. It is not a budget-related item, so it'll probably just kind of sit and wait until after the budget is done. So I think the three of us made a good team in kind of presenting our issues at all these meetings and answering questions. So if you have any questions, and again, Rich, if you had anything else to add. Mike.
Not a question, but I want to say thanks to all three of you for going up there and doing this at a particularly useful time of the legislative session. And you have to give up a whole day like that and make that trip, or you have your families and everything else to think about. So it's a real service for our legislature. Thank you all.
You're welcome. Thanks, Mike.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, you bet. All right, and that's my report. Deputy County Administrator, Jason is, as you know, has a family illness to attend to, and we expect he'll be back certainly for the next legislature meeting. Amy Hendricks, welcome.
Thank you.
Do you have a report?
I have a very brief report. I spoke with Jason today just on a couple of things. The first is that we'll be submitting in the next week or so the shared services application for reimbursement. So that's a nice piece. So we're just compiling all of those documents together. And then next week we'll be attending the city's planning and economic development meeting to talk about the Tioga Street property and provide a similar presentation to that that hit the committee this past time. And then the final update is the veterans position will be posted by the end of the week, so that will be open and people can start applying. So we'll be moving forward on that department head search soon. And that's all I have for tonight.
Thank you, Amy. Any questions? Mike.
Are we doing a wide search for the veterans officer?
Yes. Actually, I met with Amy today to look at where we'll be reaching out to. It'll be similar to the other department head searches. Then we'll hone it a little bit to people in the military, so that way we'll be reaching that target because it does have to be someone that is a veteran.
Yes.
And how long will that be open?
I think for probably a standard tends to be 6 weeks or so.
Okay. All right, great. Anything else for Amy? Thank you very much. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
I do not have a report.
Okay, thank you. Rick, Finance Director, Rick Snyder.
Thank you, Martha. I'd like to take my time tonight to introduce Andrew Brayman, who's been selected to fill the position of Deputy Finance Director of Finance. Andrew's right here. I'll tell you a little bit about Andrew. He goes by Drew. He comes to us with over 25 years of business, finance, accounting, and project management experience. He most recently served as the accounting manager and assistant controller for Kennedy Valve in Elmira. And prior to that, he served as controller of the Rockwell Museum in Corning for nearly 15 years. His past experience also includes service as director of finance for the ARC of Schuyler County in Watkins Glen and past budget committee member for the Village of Painted Post. Drew also has served in project management, information technology, and human resource roles in these organizations. Drew holds a Bachelor of Science degree in accounting from Elmira College and an associate's degree from Corning Community College. Drew's excited to get involved in the county finance department and is also interested in learning more about Ithaca and Tompkins County happenings. So please join me in welcoming Drew Brayman tonight to Tompkins County.
Thank you so much, Rick, and welcome, Drew. It's great to have you here. Do you want to be put on the spot and say a few words? You don't have to, but it's kind of what we do, you know.
Drew's been on board 1 week, so This is his second week, so he's gotten to know his way around a little bit.
Going to explain the sales tax distribution, right?
Yes, Rick has shown me his office and everything from his office that's going to come to my office. So I thank you all for the warm welcomes. I thank Rick and his staff for their warm welcomes as well, and I'm looking forward to serving Tompkins County. So it's been a wonderful. If you could turn up the heat a little bit this week, you know.
Although, inside, yeah.
Rick promises next week it'll get warmer. So thank you.
Thank you, Drew. Great to see you.
So, all right. May I?
Yes, Leslie.
I'm sorry I was not on the interview committee, Drew. You walked away way too fast.
You're going to ask about Gadsby 45, right?
Martha. Of course. Now, you really have to recite the tenets of Gadsby 45 for me. Otherwise, it's not a hire. I'm just kidding. Welcome.
Thank you.
That's Leslin's got. That's her standard question, right? So, all right.
Gotta know it.
Thank you. Anything else, Rick?
No, that's it for us. Thank you.
All right, great. Thank you so much, Michael. Wonderful. All right. Are there any resolutions to be withdrawn from, added to, or withdrawn from the agenda? Annie.
I just wanted to, since we have Mike Hall, I didn't know if folks wanted the ones about the airport withdrawn to be able to ask questions, so I'll just leave it open for folks.
No, they're not on the consent.
Oh, I thought they were on the consent.
No, we're gonna move those up and then.
Oh, never mind then.
And move up the driver's license. I'm gonna guess that the sheriff is here for the driver's license item, or just hanging out. Just hanging out. Or we'll do that next anyway. So, all right, I'll read the consent item agenda. Consent agenda items. Just let me know if you have anything to pull off. Resolution A, authorization to execute contracts and budget adjustment, learning resource grant from Kresge Foundation for Public Health. That's ID 8452. Resolution B, audit of final payment, Marushka Brothers Construction, LLC, Tompkins Center for History and Culture, Code and Building Improvements Project, ID 8432. Resolution C, audit of final payment to Boland's Excavating and Topsoil Incorporated for the terminal apron expansion, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport, ID 8409. Resolution D, resolution in support of New York State Senate Bill S-2270 and Assembly Bill A-5029, which would create the Finger Lakes Community Act of 2019, ID 8439. Resolution E,
E is off.
Okay. Resolution F, budget reappropriation of funding received in 2018 to the 2019 budget and related budget transfers for the Business Energy Advisors Program, ID 8431. Resolution G, amending Section 224 of New York State County Law to permit Tompkins County to appropriate funds toward the development, maintenance, or management of affordable housing within Tompkins County, Resolution 8448. Resolution H, payment of multi-year tourism capital grants, 2019, ID 8446.
Please.
H or I?
H and I, please.
H and I. Okay, Resolution J, authorization to accept contributions in support of the Finger Lakes Rideshare Projects, Ithaca Tompkins County Transportation Council, ID 8405. Resolution K, scheduling a public hearing for 2019 New York State Community Development Block Grant Assistance, ID 8460. Resolution L, authorization to accept New York State Child Passenger Safety Grant, Sheriff's Office, ID 8398. Resolution M, authorization to accept an award of a grant from the New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services, Probation and Community Justice Department, ID 8389. And Resolution N, budget transfer, Department of Probation and Community Justice membership dues, ID 8333. Is there a motion, please? Anna moves, Leslin seconds. All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. All right. And the appointments. Thank you. I will. Where'd they go? There they are. I got it. And we're going to do these separately. My mistake. Appointments to the Water Resources Council, Elizabeth Thomas and Marina Howarth. To the Soil and Water Conservation District, Dave McKenna, Deborah Dawson. To the Fish and Wildlife Management Board, Mike Sigler and Amanda Champion. To the Planning Advisory Board, Anna Kellis. To the Air Services Board, Heather McDaniel, Gary Stewart, Edward Levine, David McKenna. To the Downtown Ithaca Alliance, Anna Kellis. Can I get a motion on those? Moved by Annie, seconded by Leslin. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right, thank you. All right, let us go to resolutions first so that staff can move along. Let's go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Dave McKenna, Chair. You've got O and P.
Okay, resolution O, award of bid, passenger terminal building security expansion phase two with Catoctin Regional Airport, ID 8467, and I would move that.
Seconded by Glenn. Want to just explain for us?
This is just the award of bid. There is not going to be any construction at this point, at least any money for the construction at this point. Portion of the monies that are coming in will be used to continue the operation until the FAA portion of it comes through. And that's basically it.
Okay. Any questions or any other discussion? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you.
Okay. Resolution P, authorizing acceptance of Federal Aviation Administration grant for a passenger the passenger terminal security expansion phase two at the Catoctin Regional Airport, ID 8468, and I would move that.
Seconded by Glenn Morin. Discussion? Go ahead.
Basically, it's just authorizing the acceptance of the grant when it comes through.
All right. Any questions or discussion? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? Thank you very much. Mike, did you want to say anything? You don't have to, but I called director of the airport. Okay. Let's tell Jason that the meetings are going to move along a lot faster if he stays in Montreal. I didn't mean that. Sorry. All right. Thank you very much, Dave. We'll come back to your report in a little bit. Let's see. Rich, do you want to take the two you have for public safety?
Sure. And I would do resolution 8426, appropriation from contingent fund for terminal pay reimbursement district attorney. And I'd so move.
Seconded by Shauna. Discussion? This is a short form roll call.
Ms. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Are there any no's? All right, that's unanimous. Thank you.
And I have resolution 8438, urging New York State to pass the Driver's License Access and Privacy Act to allow the issuance of driver's licenses to New York State residents regardless of immigration status. And I would ask if Anna Kellis could move it.
Happy to. All right, seconded by Rich.
Yeah.
John. Okay. Thank you.
And I turn it over to Anna if you wanted to say some more.
Sure,
it's your resolution.
Thank you, Rich. I really appreciate it. So I also wanted to thank everyone. This did get unanimous support out of the committee. I did do some due diligence before submitting this that it was supported by our county clerk. It was also strongly supported by our Sheriff Osborne, who has been promoting this at the state level and is actually on committees looking to promote issues like this, including this issue. There are a couple key things that I did want to point out to people. This is not trying to fix our immigration issue completely on a federal level. This is a very precise, concise issue. There are people who are undocumented who are already driving And this is to address the issue of making sure that they have the ability to get a license. That license will say not for federal purposes. That's important, but it will allow them to get their car insured and to drive legally on the road. There has been extensive research that has shown that this does, in fact, increase safety on the roads. So while the federal government is dealing with figuring out our immigration policies, we locally can make sure that everybody on the road here is safe. That is its sole purpose. It is, again, not trying to fix anything beyond that. The one thing, though, that I would say that I do appreciate about this is that all the research, again, which I do appreciate research, as everybody knows, does show that the ability for immigrants to integrate fully into a municipality both benefits the municipality with respect to safety, but also economics, the vibrancy of the community, cases of violence, homelessness, a myriad of public safety issues and public health issues. So all in all, this is a step in the right direction of allowing for integration of our immigrant neighbors in the county of in our county. This is just in our county. So, in a nutshell.
Thank you, Anna. Anybody else? Discussion? Annie?
I think it said the resolution that standard driver's license. Is it going to be, do you know if it's going to be marked in some way?
Correct.
To show that it's not going to be a regular driver's license?
Yep. So it will have actually literally on the driver's license, not for federal purposes, and that is the definition of a standard license. So that's the distinction.
Is that going to red flag those folks?
No. So actually in the resolution, it specifically states that people cannot be asked about their immigration status or judged about their immigration status with respect to this, and also that DMV do not need any papers confirming one way or another about immigration status. The other thing that's really important is that not only do people not have to answer that question is unlawful but prohibited in this resolution, but also people can request that all of their documentation that they provide, so they would, for example, provide documentation of their, say, if they came from Mexico, they would have their birth certificate. That is one thing that you might want to have. Right, so that would be from Mexico, but they can ask that none of their paperwork be photocopied or saved on file at the DMV, and that is part of the state requirement.
Thank you.
Mike Sigler.
So I spoke on this at your committee. Thank you for having me there. That was nice of you.
Sure.
As I said at the time there, I don't understand this at all. I don't even understand how we're going down this road, to be honest with you. I mean, granted, it doesn't address the immigration issue that's facing us. I mean, this is pretty much trying to ignore the immigration issue that we have in front of us. I mean, this month alone, we're looking at 100,000 people crossing the border, and this is kind of saying, no, you know, we don't have a problem. We may differ on solutions, but to act like 100,000 people crossing the southern border isn't an issue is I don't even understand what you're talking about. In this proposal that you have here in front of us, it's talking about how this is going to allow people to get to jobs. Frankly, they're not supposed to have jobs. I'm not trying to other anybody, but, I mean, the law here is, no, you have to actually have a Social Security number to work in this country. So, yeah, you're not paying FICA. You're not paying Social Security taxes. You're not paying a lot of the taxes that all the Americans pay. Anna's going to raise her hand in a second and say, that's not true.
Oh, I already raised my hand.
All right. And, you know, I have farmer friends who say, no, you know, we collect taxes and we pay those into the federal government for these people because they give us the paperwork. They give us the Social Security numbers. Well, but they're not their Social Security numbers. They're somebody else's Social Security numbers. So now what are we going to do now? We're just going to turn a blind eye to identity theft as well? I mean, how far down this road do you want to go? That's the part I'm not really understanding here about you folks. I mean, I have three daughters. They're not working right now. Should I give somebody their Social Security numbers so that those people can work in this country with some type of documentation? I don't think anybody in this room would say that's a good idea, but that's exactly what's happening. So I don't really understand the road we want to go down. This driver's license that you have in your wallet right now, this lets you drive in pretty much any country, every state. And you're saying that we're going to take a group of people who don't have any of that documentation, and you're saying to the state of you know, Arizona, yeah, you know, this person, we've vetted them. They're good to drive on your roads. You're saying to the country of China, yeah, you know, this guy's okay to drive on your roads as well. He's a New York citizen. But they're not a New York citizen. There is no documentation other than this license you want to give them. And I should point out, if you do come here with a driver's license, you're allowed to drive in this state too. If I come from Mexico, if I come from Canada, I can drive in this state. I don't need an international driver's license to do that. So you are the first people giving this person the right to drive. And I don't understand where you're getting the paperwork to do that. I want to say this too. I went to a Tom Reed meeting out in Groton, and immigration came up a lot, and people were talking about it a lot. And the one person was like, well, I don't understand why we don't do like an Ellis Island. It worked so well back then. Yeah, well, why don't we do that? I mean, we have point of entry. That's all I'm asking, is that people go to a point of entry like Ellis Island. It was an island, after all. People went there by ship. They signed a book. They said, where are you going to be living? Who's going to employ you? Fantastic. See you later. Have a good life. We're going to be sending your mail to that address. I mean, I don't understand where we went so off the rails from that, because that's kind of what you can still do in this country. I met with a lawyer friend of mine this week. He's talking about a couple that have been trying to immigrate here for the last, 5 years. They've spent a lot of money to do this. You know, we go over there to the clerk when they're signing in new citizens, and I got to tell you, they're wondering, this couple, why they're bothering. They're spending thousands of dollars to become U.S. citizens, and it doesn't really matter anymore, it seems. So, you know, for my own purposes, I would say this is just a lot of wasted energy. You know, you're never going to build this issue to a head. We have a huge backlog of people waiting to get in this country and work legally. Back to 1993, we have a backlog on some countries. Why don't we work on that? Why don't we solve that? Why don't we work on, you know, if you want more people in the country, okay, let's boost the numbers of how many people can come from country X or country Y or country Z. I mean, I really look at this as you're hurting the people that you say you want to help, because you're making it easier to live in the shadows. And frankly, it's like this sanctuary county thing, right? We're saying, oh, no, you'll be safe here. I can't promise that, so that's why I couldn't vote for it. You're promising, you're making promises you can't keep. Now, granted, we had one deputy who maybe didn't know the policy. I have no idea. But that may happen again. And what are we going to do then? Are we going to punish them because they're not obeying a policy of the county? We're saying right now that we're not going to obey federal law. Right? We're a county legislature. We're going to pass some laws here. And when people break those, are we going to say, oh, we're going to punish you? How could we? They're just not obeying the laws that we made, just like we're not obeying the laws of the nation. I mean, every time I get elected, I come in and I sign this card. And I come in, it's 4 years. Here's a picture, cute little family getting signed. It's kind of fun. And, right on the card it says, I solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States. And I'm sorry, you guys are just, it doesn't matter. You guys are saying it doesn't matter anymore that I have to sign that card or that oath doesn't matter. And I really wish you would consider that when you vote on stuff like this, but it doesn't seem like we're going to go down that path. So thank you very much.
So before I call on Anna or others, I wanted to point out this is simply urging New York State to pass a law. This would not do anything locally unless New York State passes and the governor signs a law. So we're not, by voting on this, breaking any law. We're simply lobbying about another law. Anna, were there other hands? Yep. Mike Lane, did you have your hand up? Okay.
So just a few things. I don't want us to be, this is the Mike Anna show, which we tend to do, and we deeply both appreciate it. But there are a few things that I do want to point out that are inaccuracies in the argument that I continue to hear, which is really important to remember. People should never assume that immigrants have committed a crime by the sheer fact of being here undocumented. The conversation of these are bad people, a whole slew of, and therefore they should not be here, I hear it a lot. There is an insinuation, and I just want to put it on the record that it is on record, that it is not a crime. I don't know what world you live in, but I live in a world that's very gray. There are very few places where there's black and white. So we have a system in place, and somewhere in the gray is a number of people here who do not have documentation. In the meantime, some of us are trying to deal with how do you live in that world of gray, and in our world as government, our job is to provide public safety. This is something to address that public safety and acknowledge that we've got some gray. The other thing that I think is exceptionally important for us to remember is that we argue back and forth about whether or not people who are undocumented should have a car, should be able to walk outside during the day, whatever it is, the conversation. What doesn't come up very often is the fact that we have absolutely no problem taking $11.64 billion in state and local taxes from undocumented immigrants. We don't want them to drive, God forbid. We don't want them to have a driver's license so that we can keep the road safe. But oh, heck yeah, we'll take your $11.64 billion of taxpayer money. No problem. There is a serious discrepancy. If we're going to take their money that they've earned in our country, then we need to acknowledge that we're allowing them to work in this country and allow them to do that job. If you don't want them to have that, then don't take taxpayer money from them. So that's a gray that really needs to be discussed that isn't discussed. And the last thing is this impact on our farmers, our impact on our factories, impact on industry. We seem to not have a problem of having undocumented immigrants working in these industries at all, but we don't want them to be able to get there. We don't want them to be able to live in houses while they're doing these jobs. And we have had the case, a significant rise, in a lot of our farmers committing suicide. Why? Because their crops are rotting in the fields. They aren't able to actually continue to do their work because of the immigration policies that we currently have. So if we're going to acknowledge these parts, let's acknowledge the whole situation and acknowledge it's very gray. Thanks.
Mike Lane and then Leslie.
Mike, you point out some issues with immigration which are correct, and it is a mess. I don't think too many of us would disagree with that. The fault lies with our Congress, which fails to come to a reasonable compromise on how to deal with the immigration problem we have, people coming across the border, people being able to be documented, have jobs here waiting for them, other kinds of things. It's not a great thing, but whenever there's been a bipartisan effort, Democrat and Republican presidents, whenever there's been a bipartisan effort to come to some kind of a public law that would solve some of these problems, it's been torpedoed by those that generate fear, xenophobes and other people like that. This small thing with the driver's license isn't going to solve any of that. It's going to help people. It's going to protect some of the people that are on the road these drivers who are driving without licenses are going to be on, whether we like it or not. Mike, I don't know how far down the road we'll go, but I want whoever's driving to have a license.
Thank you, Mike. Leslie?
Mike, I couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you. And, Mike, I hear you. And, yes, it is very gray. I will admit publicly that if not for an undocumented immigrant, I would not be here. And I am, and I think I turned out all right. And I want to correct one thing that you said, Mike, as well, is unless the laws have recently changed, you cannot just get a license and drive in New York State if you come from a different country.
You don't need to get a license. You can use the license from your
country. Cannot.
I looked it up.
Not all countries.
I don't know about all countries.
Very specific countries that you're allowed to do that, not all. You made a general statement, and so I want to correct that. You have to have a New York license. You have to have... for most things now, if you don't have a passport, a license issued by the state with your picture in order to prove this is who you are. People no longer take other things. So there's lots of benefits to having a license, but pretty much what Mike said is where I'm going. I also want to caution that we not buy into the rhetoric that immigrants, documented or undocumented, are crime mongers in this country. That troubles me tremendously. I'm an immigrant. I'm not saying you said that, but underneath, and some of what you said people are saying in places, is what we hear a lot. And I don't remember if I've committed any crimes yet. And I don't intend to. And I'm just one person, but there are many, many, many more of us who are here who that's not what our mode of operation is. We're not here for that. We work hard. We contribute. And whatever ways and means that we can work towards being legal, this might be one of those ways we can. I have all my documentation, and most times I can't travel overseas, even to Canada, and come back in this country without being held up and given the 5th, 6th, 3rd, 4th, 18th degree. It is a very frightening experience for me, although I have every license I carry, my city ID, my legislature ID, my driver's license, everything. So to have something that not only allow people to drive, that we say they can drive safely, but also serves as the primary thing folks look for identification, I think is a small thing that we can urge the state to do.
Mike, I'm going to call myself and then Annie.
Yep, I'll be quick. Just the two things. From the New York State DMV, driving in New York State, who can drive here? Directly from their website, to drive a car or motorcycle in New York State, you must be at least 16 years old and have a valid New York State driver's license or learner permit, or a valid driver's license or permit issued by another state or country.
Not all countries. I hear what you're saying, but I'm saying
not me
it's
saying
general.
It. That's it's New York not. State saying it. So that's
it's
that.
Not, and they'll have to fix
As
it.
As for the rest,
not true.
I didn't say any of those things. I literally didn't say anything about not wanting immigrants in this country. I want more immigrants in this country. Frankly, we have a demographic problem in this country. We're having 1.8 babies. That's not going to keep up with population in this country. So we are going to have a declining population, and that's with immigration. So listen, I have no problem. I want people to come in legally. I don't really understand why that's such a big, you know, hullabaloo over why is that an issue. I would like people to show up at a port of entry, say, hey, listen, I'm going to go work on this farm in upstate New York. It's dairy. It's not seasonal. I don't really want to become a citizen. I just want to work, make some money, send it home to my family. I don't really have a big problem with that. I don't know a lot. I mean, if the farmers were to get together and say, hey, Congress, we actually need this, I would hope that something would get done. But you're right. I don't think just turning a blind eye to – I'm not saying it's illegal to come in the country. We disagree on that, but that's not the point I'm making. The point I'm making is you're making one thing that's happening, this identity theft, this idea of getting a Social Security number just off the street, and you're compounding that issue and making other activity worse. You're basically making people, you know – enter into criminal activity even without them kind of wanting to. So, thanks.
I just want to say a couple things. First, I consider that no human is illegal. And when somebody comes to this country and the thousands or hundreds of thousands that you talked about, Mike, are coming now, the vast majority are presenting themselves at ports of entry. They are seeking asylum. This administration is criminalizing that. I would not be here if my grandparents hadn't sought asylum here, escaping the pogroms in Russia. I bet I could say that about a lot of you, about a lot of the people who are watching. Last I knew, I don't think there's anybody in here who's Native American descent. We all depended on somebody who came here whether they had this or that paperwork or not, they came here and built this country. And you're right. We don't have enough. We're not growing in terms of our birth rate. And frankly, New York State should be welcoming, especially upstate, should be welcoming new people coming in to milk our cows and to work in our factories and to work in all sorts of occupations. I am glad that this bill exists. I'm glad I hope we will support it, because frankly, people are going to drive if they have to, they're going to drive whether they have a license or not. And if they happen to get into a crash, whether for their fault or not their fault, I hope they have insurance. Because if that's me and they don't have a license and don't have insurance, then it's a hit and run. And they're gone. And frankly, they might be hurt as well. What do they do? Then do they go to a hospital when they're not? They don't even have a license. How do they explain they were in a car crash? This is harm reduction, folks. This is folks who are here who need to have the skill, the training in New York State laws, need to have the ability to get insurance, so that others of us can be protected as well as that they will be protected. So I'm proud that we have this in front of us, and I hope folks will vote for it. Annie, I think you had your hand up.
Yes, thank you. So I want to reiterate about a lot of these folks are already driving, and so a lot of them are driving what we call illegally, as some people are coming here without licenses from other countries and for whatever reasons. So I would like them to be educated and trained on how to drive in our country. I've driven overseas, often not driven overseas when I travel. The laws are different. So I would like those folks who are already here and driving to know how to drive as best they can here. And so for the folks without licenses, then absolutely I want them to be able to get a license to be able to travel all around we talked about work already at length, but also medical appointments, attend religious worship, to take their family members and themselves to medical appointments, to buy groceries, to take their children, who are often already U.S. citizens, to be able to take them to school and their medical appointments. Another part of this resolution says that this will improve New York's economy by providing much-needed revenue through fees and taxes at an estimated $57 million, which will be additional revenue for New York State and county governments. This will also improve trust between law enforcement and immigrant communities with valid legal ID. Witnesses and victims of crime will be more readily reporting and cooperating with police. Police will be able to identify the motorists and review their traffic records, and this will allow police to fulfill their duties more efficiently and effectively. So I will be voting for this.
Thank you, Annie. Henry.
Mike, I have an issue with you calling this somehow a legal law that will somehow violate the Constitution of the United States by passing this law, which doesn't even require a local law, just supports the New York law. And I remember during the public safety meeting, I talked to the sheriff, and I asked the sheriff point blank, what was his position on this bill or this resolution? And he said it was a no-brainer to him. And if he wants to speak again about this, I would invite him to come to the microphone and give his opinion on this resolution.
That'd be great. Sheriff Osborne?
Okay. Well, I didn't plan on speaking, but I absolutely will do that. So thanks for putting me on the spot.
Okay. No problem.
Yes, I did support this, as do other sheriffs across New York State. I can't say all the sheriffs, but I have talked to the sheriff in Ulster County. He's getting behind this. Also, Sheriff Apple in Albany County. And, you know, when I think about things, I try to simplify them as easy as I can for my own well-being. And, you know, when I was elected sheriff, one thing I learned that as sheriff, my job duty under the state constitution is I'm the conservator of the peace. And that comes with a lot of weight. That sounds pretty lofty, and it's a lot of responsibility. You know, I don't get to pick, you know, who I conserve that peace for. You know, as I was sitting here at the table, not planning on speaking, I've been working on my family history, and I was reading how my ancestors came over from England and founded New Haven, Connecticut. And, you know, and I was reading how they smuggled themselves upon ships. Some people on the same ship were hidden in casks of wine, just trying to get over, you know. And so this is nothing new to me or new to us. You know, and what I think about when I think about conserving the peace, I think about the people that often have to call law enforcement and what maybe bars them from doing that. I think about the immigrant female that works on a farm who is maybe abused by a farmhand and fears calling us because she's afraid that we're going to start asking for IDs and trying to figure out who she is and something bad's going to happen to her and her family. Or perhaps one of her child was abused or something along that. That's what's important to me as sheriff of this county. I want people to be able to call the police, call the sheriff's office, have us be able to respond, investigate their concerns, have an ID there that's readily available that they can show us that will squash any concerns the deputy may have, and we can move on from there and treat them like we would treat any other victim of any other crime, like anybody else in Tompkins County. That's what I care about, and that's why I'm supporting this.
Thank you, Sheriff. All right, I'm pretty sure minds are made up, so are we ready to vote? Okay. All those in favor of Resolution R, please raise your hands. Opposed. That's 10-3. It passes. All right. Thank you very much, Rich. That is your. Those were the two that you had.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Let's go to Housing and Economic Development Committee and H and I, which came off the consent agenda.
Sorry, I'm still recovering.
Yeah. Packet page 17. Resolution H.
This is the payment of multi-year tourism capital grant 2019, pending committee action. Oh, that's already taken. This is ID number 8446. I'll move that.
Seconded by somebody. Mike Lane. Okay. Mike. And I guess who took it off?
Mike, you have to abstain from?
Yeah, I just have to abstain from both of them. So that was the only reason I pulled them off.
Okay, because of your employment with them?
Yeah, with Park. So if they want to do any advertising with Park, which I hope they do, that's why I can't vote on this, is money. Things like that.
Okay. All right. Any other discussion? All right. All in favor of Resolution H, please raise your hands. Any opposed?
You know what I meant.
You went to vote?
Are we tiring you out?
I wasn't going to count you, Mike. And abstentions. Abstentions? Okay.
There we go.
All right. That passes. How many are here? We got 13 here. So that passes 12-0 with one abstention. Resolution I.
Resolution I. Not J, but I. Award of 2019 Arts and Culture Organization Development Grants, ID 8408.
Okay, seconded by Shauna Black.
And I have some information to share.
Okay, well, Mike, you want to recuse from this one, too. Okay. Go ahead, Anna.
So I've gotten a few questions from people, and I just wanted to share some background information so that people have some context. So this year there was $250,000 for the ACOD grants. This is $20,000. So if I understand this correctly, well, let me back up. So in 2017, ACOD had $197,000. In 2018, there was $217,870. That's 11% increase from 2017 to 18. And then there was an additional 9% increase, taking out the cap funding, that brings it to $237,000. So from 2017 to 2019, with the addition of the added funding from the surplus, there was a 21% increase in the ACOD funding. That was one of the largest grants increases, may have been the largest grant increase. The focus of this round, so I wanted to remind everybody, ACOD is a two-year grant. So they were actually awarded, the reason why I'm bringing in 2017 is because they were actually awarded in 2018. And then that would be for the 2018 year and the 2019 year. So the additional funding, they're all reassessed the second year. This is typical, standard, and evaluated on whether or not they should continue to get the allocated amount from the first year. That was identified in the first year. So because there was a $20,000 increase above and beyond what was awarded at the beginning of the 2 years for this grant, this was different than what it typically is, which is simply, yes, we'll keep them to what we identified in the beginning of the first year. This was, what do we want to do with the additional $20,000? So the $20,000 was split up among the organizations that were originally reduced in 2015, not because of a merit issue, but because the criteria were expanded for inclusion in the grant or for eligibility in the grant after an extensive study on whether or not to increase, to expand the criteria for eligibility for this grant. And that happened in 2014, and that happened in 2015. So the $20,000 was split among the organizations that did have that reduction as a result of the expanded eligibility criteria. And all of them have been brought back to within 96% of the amount that they were awarded in 2015. So I'm just going to go through these really quickly. Cayuga Chamber asked for $29,800. I want to note that the max that can be asked for is $30,000. So they essentially asked for $30,000. And this grant is recommending $26,000. Which is 1,000 less than 2015, so that's the within 96%. PRI, they asked for 60,000 because they were a merge between PRI and the Science Center.
Nature Center.
I'm sorry, the Nature Center. Thank you. Sorry. The recommendation is 38,530, and this is within $1,400 of what they were awarded in 2015, which was 40,000. The History Center asked for $26,000, and we're recommending $26,000. In 2015, they were awarded $27,000. This year, they asked for $26,000. They got $26,000, so they got 100% of what they asked for. The Hangar Theater asked for $30,000, the maximum amount allowable. It's recommended $26,000, and again, this was $1,000 difference from 2015, so quite negligible. And the intention was focused, the $20,000 was focused on the organizations that were impacted in 2015. So just wanted to give that background. Nick, did I do you justice? Great.
All right. Thanks very much, Anna.
Yep.
Dan.
So the money in this grant, the ACOG grant, is operations funding. Operations funding is the funding that that organizations use to keep their lights on. This funding for a number of arts and cultural organizations was cut from the county hotel's room tax allocations in 2015. And funding for five of these organizations is still below what it was in 2015, as Anna just laid out in detail. If your wages were less than they were in 2015, you'd probably be concerned. If they're only 96% of what they were in 2015, you'd probably not be happy about that. The county legislature routinely expresses concern about state aid that is not keeping up with costs of doing business. Just today we heard about some concerns that were expressed from the county legislature to Albany. The latest one that I remember is about state aid to community colleges, which has not kept pace with the true costs of what it costs to operate our community college. The following organizations are receiving less in operations funding from us than they were in 2015: the Cayuga Chamber Orchestra, the Hangar Theater, the History Center, Museum of the Earth, Cayuga Nature Center, and the State Theater. And in addition to that, operations funding for the Ithaca Shakespeare Company has been completely eliminated. So this would be understandable if the hotel tax revenue had decreased. However, just the opposite is what actually happened. During the same period we're talking about, 2015 until today, the hotel tax revenue has increased 24%. That's $500,000 more every year that we are getting than we did in 2015. Yet at the same time, we have cut the operations budget funding to these arts and cultural organizations, and we've increased the administrative costs to run this particular program. So for these reasons, I'm going to be voting against this resolution.
Anna? Anna and then Mike.
Just a few things I forgot to mention. Something that I found that was really helpful for me in this process, because I had heard you for last year to talk about how this is very specifically a grant to keep the lights on. And so, you know, that's how I thought about it. But having been asked to join that committee and having read all of the grants, almost every single one of them had nothing to do with keeping the lights on. Almost every one of them was actually about marketing. And there is a marketing, there are two grants specifically for marketing. And so there has been a bit of a drift in this grant. I'm not going to say that marketing isn't integral. Marketing certainly helps stabilize organizations. A lot of the organizations that ask for it in the other two grants. That's extremely important point is that that's not what's being asked for, is keeping the lights on. This isn't going to wages or personnel, so that's also very important. It's going to marketing. The room tax has increased by 24%, and this grant has gone up 21%. So almost the exact percent that has been the actual increase seen for the entire fund overall. And I will reiterate that this particular grant has seen one of the greatest increases of all the grants in tourism, even though a majority of the reason that people come to the county is actually outdoor recreation and not arts and culture. I certainly wouldn't say that we should cut arts and culture, but I will say that it is a concern that the thing that brings in the greatest amount of tourists is the thing that gets neglected the most. So that's something that actually the board is really looking at, and I think that everybody needs to keep in mind in this as we go through this and as we watch the board develop the strategy moving forward.
Mike Lane.
Dan, last year you did us a service. You brought this issue to our attention about the funding for our various arts programs here. I can remember a spirited debate which you brought forward. We had people from STPB here to listen to us talk, and at that time, many of us, at least I was, very concerned about, where we're going with this. And I remember saying that if there wasn't some movement made this year, I would probably be opposed to what they were doing. But I think Anna's pointed out that although we haven't got all the way there, they have made a substantial, they heard us. They heard you, Dan. And I really think you should think about this one. It's not all the way, but it's a compromise. And I think they put some money into it because we wanted them to do that, and I think that's a good thing. So I know you'd like to see it all the way there, but there's been a big step.
Dan, did I see your hand up? Did I see your hand? Dan, did I see your hand up before?
No, thanks.
Okay. All right. Anything else? Ready to vote on resolution I?
May I ask a question?
Sure. But pull the microphone. I can't hear you.
I see the, usually we get in our packet or somewhere a list of all who applied and which ones were being supported. I didn't see that. Is it somewhere that we can take a look?
Yeah, Nick Helmholt is our tourism planner. I want to say when I've been on the committee in the past, you get pages and pages and pages, and I know the staff has often said, well, they know that the committee has to get all of that, but yeah, then there's always a conversation about how much the legislature gets.
I'm not asking for pages. I'm just asking for the list of all who apply. We usually get that list.
Okay.
What they applied and how much in either a column that says why they were funded or not.
Right. So this is year two of a two-year award, so that information
that's
was
right.
in
that's
approximately
right.
1 year ago's packet.
That is very right, Nick.
If
thank
you would
you.
Like, I can share this document with you.
You don't have to. I'm sure I have it in my drawer.
Okay.
It's a two-year cycle. Thank you.
You're most welcome.
All right. Henry.
And, Nick, is it my understanding that you're going to look at the allocation between these funds for next year?
Correct. Program will be reopening for asking for applications later this fall. There are some changes under consideration as described in the memo that the STPB is evaluating presently in terms of how the grant will operate in the next cycle. Yep.
All right. All in favor of resolution I, please raise your hands. I'm sorry, keep them up. Opposed. That's 10 to 1 and an abstention. Seems like I missed somebody.
There's two missing. Oh, no, one missing.
Dave, did you vote? In which way?
Four.
Okay, so I just missed your hand.
Did you count yourself?
I thought I did. Okay, so it's 12. 12 to 1 to 0. 12, 11, yes. 1, no, and 1 abstention. That one recused, yeah. Okay? That's 13, right? All right, that passes. Thank you very much. Okay, I think we're finished the business that staff is waiting for, correct? All right, let's go back to committee reports. Health and Human Services, Shauna Black, Chair.
Yes, I have a short report. We met Friday, March 1st, and one of our annual goals, we spent most of the meeting working on the annual goals, and I will be updating those and sending those to committee members in the next few days. I'll also send a copy over to you, Martha, for our meeting. We also talked about setting up a source of income exploratory committee, which will have members of the Human Rights Commission, the legislature, and members of the community, as well as landlords. Our next meeting will be Friday, April 5th at 9 a.m., and Kit Kephart, the commissioner from Department of Social Services, will be there, and she'll discuss ODADA programs that DSS administers that have to do with housing people in our community.
Thanks very much, Shauna. Any questions? You did remind me of the meeting that we've scheduled for next Tuesday. Let me make sure the date, the 12th. As you mentioned, the committee goals. So the entire legislature, almost everybody is either a chair or a vice chair of a committee. So everybody is certainly invited, and we hope you will come next Tuesday from 9:30 to 10:30 in this room. We talked about having a meeting of committee chairs and vice chairs to talk about committee process, how to work with staff, how to set goals, and what goals you are sending. We were able to scrape out an hour that when almost everybody could make it. So hope that you can join us again in this room. And if committee chairs can send me your goals, whether they're draft or you've adopted them, I'll put them together into one document so everybody has all of them. And Jason will be here. Kathy Covert has given me some thoughts that she wanted to share with everybody, but she's on vacation for a couple of weeks. So next Tuesday at 9:30. Thank you very much. All right. Facilities and infrastructure, Dave McKenna.
Okay. We basically had the resolutions that we passed earlier this evening on the Senate agenda. We also authorized the Planning and Sustainability Department to go ahead with the Route 13 study from Warren Road to Dryden. And we discussed committee goals, and our next meeting is on 3/21.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike. Dave, are there any questions? Thank you, Dave.
Government I've called Glenn before, but not Mike.
Fair enough. Government Operations Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
We haven't met since our last legislature meeting, but we will be meeting this Thursday at 1:30 here in Chambers. And we'll be talking about, among other things, the census coming up in 2020 and the possibility of a full count committee. We'll be hearing some from our county attorney about the status of the Municipal Electric and Gas Alliance. And we'll be doing lots of good things. So we will be a little short. We will have a quorum. Do want to, in case she's listening or watch the rerun here, we do want to say to Deborah Dawson, bonjour.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions for Mike Henry?
Mike, will you be handling the flag policy?
That is working. Maybe Lisa could tell us the status of that. If it's ready to come forward, we will talk about it.
We're going to be discussing it preliminarily for information only, but it's not in the resolution to move forward to the legislature, because okay. There are some suggested revisions to it.
Okay.
Listen.
I have a question. So if Workforce Diversity and Inclusion would like to weigh in when you get to their point, is that something that can come to WDIC as well so that we have some input?
Yeah, I think that was a part of what we were going to talk about also at GO. Yes, so
okay,
that
right
we could.
Here, Lisa, I got you.
Got it.
Thank you.
Anything else for Mike? Thank you, Mike Lane. Planning, Energy, Environmental Quality Committee. I guess that would be Anna as vice chair.
Yeah, so I want to move the resolution first, urging New York State to increase funding for clean water infrastructure, ID 8435, that I pulled from the consent agenda. Mm-hmm.
Is there a second? Seconded by Leslin.
Thank you, Leslin. I pulled it because I wanted to add a whereas statement that I've written out. And it's an information statement to help give more clarity to the state of the needs of water infrastructure investments in New York State. A comptroller report did come out recently, actually 2017, it's recent enough, and a very extensive report across the state evaluating the drinking water system. And giving a 20-year cost estimate of what it would take just for the drinking water component, and this is not for wastewater. It's pretty profound. So my language is, whereas a recent New York State Comptroller report on drinking water systems in New York estimated a, quote, 20-year cost of needed water investment for drinking water at $61 billion alone, and that is an estimate of $22 billion through the EPA and $39 billion through the Department of Health. I didn't make that split. I figured $61 billion as a total was good enough.
Where did you want to put that?
I wanted to put that right after the fourth whereas statement, so it will now be the fifth whereas statement, so at line 14. And I have it written out to give to Michelle so that you don't have to write the whole thing down.
Okay. Thank you. I assume that's friendly to you. All right.
Leslin,
that's friendly? Okay, great. Any other discussion? Ready to vote on that, on the resolution with that addition? Please raise your hands. All in favor? Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much.
So then I have a quick report. We did cover a presentation on the state of hydrilla in Cayuga Lake. If anybody wants to see it, there are wonderful maps in the agenda packet that show the hydrilla findings that existed, I think, as early as 2014, if I recall. That's as early as it shows. And then it has an image each year of the progression of the areas in which we've eradicated it. Getting to 2018, and you can see that there are a lot of scattered small pieces that they have found in 2018. It seems to ebb and flow, I think, was a take-home message. He also talked about how profoundly difficult it is to treat. And so I just wanted to share that really briefly, that it's a point source treatment which is very difficult. You have to get it at a very specific stage, because once it has established deep roots, and he showed us a picture of the root system, the treatment can't get to those roots. So it'll kill the top, the root will survive, and then the next season shoot back up. So that was concerning and also very educational and very helpful to get a sense of what we're dealing with. And it's big, and it is of deep concern, so something to keep our eyes out for. Deborah gave a list of priorities for next year. Resolve issues held over from PDEC last year, single-use bags, forest management plan. Include more input from ag and farm sector representatives, and I think we were all very excited about that. Maintain an overall focus on water issues so that we can become well-informed advocates for protecting our county's water resources. And finally, become better informed about energy issues as they relate to climate change and the county's energy strategy goals.
Thank you very much, Anna. Any questions for Anna? Thank you. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
This committee has also not met since our last legislative meeting. We will be meeting on March 15th. And for the Latin scholars among us, that is the Ides of March. And we will be taking up the budget issues that have come up. We haven't got the agenda together yet, but one thing I do want to say, it looks like the retreat is going to be finalized for April 30th. We didn't seem to have any adverse reaction to that. So keep that on your calendars, folks.
Thank you. Any questions for Mike? I'm going to go ask you and Dave a question. Dave, you're having at the next facilities meeting a presentation on the Tioga Street property. And if we vote, if there's a motion, resolution to move ahead with the state, with the purchase, I mean that would be contemplated there, right?
I believe so, yeah.
And then that would also need to go to budget. So there may need to be a special, but what's the date of your facilities meeting?
21st.
The 21st of March, so there was a conversation about we may need to have a special budget meeting.
We're open to that.
Okay. So we have a little time to work on that, but we should actually kind of work on scheduling that, and we can always cancel it if it's not needed, right?
It is possible we could have a meeting ahead of the ledge meeting a couple days earlier than that, a joint meeting, if you want to do it that way.
Well, I think the program side of it is really important. Needs real time to, you know, have people have a lot of discussion as much as they need. The budget side of it is basically the finance side, and I want to make sure that there's enough time and that the public knows that that's when it's going to be discussed, et cetera. I think staff needs the time to prepare for March 21st. They, you know, wouldn't be able to move it earlier. So I think if we can work with the budget committee and come up with something in between,
March 21st and the legislature meeting. That might work. All right? I know. I think Jason was planning to do something like that.
Okay.
All right. Thank you both very much. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean, Claire Bourne, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. I haven't been my best self lately. Not feeling up to par. So I want to thank Anna and Annie and Henry for carrying on with WDIC and invite Anna as vice chair to give the report. But before I do, to be away, I do want to thank whoever it is on this legislature for putting this lovely gift in my drawer. I don't know who's responsible, but it certainly lifted my spirits. Thank you very, very much.
Can you take it out?
No. Hopefully you'll reveal yourself. I have the privilege of spending some time in the presence of her husband a couple of weeks ago in Oakland. I told Martha if she was there, it would have been all over. But anyhow, thank you all, and I'll have you do the report.
Wonderful.
Anna? This is a record for you, right?
It is, but I do. I want to just say thank you to Leslyn for making this committee what it is, and the commitment that you have to do the diversity and inclusion work in this committee. A lot of the reports that I'm going to give out were actually inspired by, pushed by, championed by Leslyn over decade and change, and almost two decades doing this work. So, just hear my words, but know it's Leslyn's work. She asked to have one thing on the agenda, which was a review and update of the diversity and inclusion policy. And we did, I'm proud to say, we had quite a robust discussion, quite colorful discussion, so thank you. It was colorful, and Lisa, who is the champion of all things policy update, and I think we all owe you a phenomenal debt of gratitude for that, took down all of the notes to update that, and we'll bring it back to the committee. Annie did bring up a discussion of the flags and the flag policy. Thank you, Annie. And there was a universal request that that policy do go jointly through WDIC, which I thought was a great inclusive request. So thank you, Mike, for honoring that. We had a presentation about ADA facilities and the policy that we have for ADA compliance. And it's quite extensive, a book that's like 200 pages thick that I think actually Lisa read all of before coming to the meeting. The one thing, though, that was noted is that we don't really have a policy or even sort of an education program in place for awareness and sensitivity for people with invisible disabilities. So for people who are visually impaired or people who have auditory impairments, I have been to way too many meetings where microphones are not used and people who can't hear literally miss out and have to sit and pretend that they understand, my mother being one of them, and I've seen it on way too many occasions. It's a profoundly isolating experience and something that they're left in silence experiencing. So that's something that might be worthwhile pursuing on how we might want to consider being inclusive in that way and creating some policies. Lastly, we had the final discussion on report on current workforce demographics based on the affirmative action policy guidelines. And there's something called the four-fifths rule. And what that means is you evaluate the number of people that you have from groups like the people of color, for example, take that group. And the four-fifths rule is that there's a, I'm going to butcher it potentially, but you have a certain percentage of the total population. So say 4% of the population is POC in the catchment pool. then you want four-fifths, so say it's, you know, say it's 5% in the population, then you would want at least 4% POC in your staff. And then you would be reaching the affirmative action. You'll be reaching the level. And what that means is that it gives a little wiggle room to be due by chance. So if you have less than 4% in that scenario, that means that there is a significant likelihood that there is actually some discrimination in the hiring and retention policy. It gives a little wiggle room for that probability of chance. So we evaluated where we stand with respect to four-fifths rule compared to the catchment of our county and then with the catchment of our county and contiguous counties. If you look at just our county, we actually are falling slightly short of that four-fifths. So we have a little bit of work to do in evaluating what our policies are with respect to both recruitment and retention, and I think that that is something very worth noting. That's the end of that discussion. More to come on that.
Thanks, Anna. Any questions? Annie?
Thanks, Anna. I just wanted to also add that the LGBTQ law enforcement task force subgroup of that is we're working on meeting, starting up our meetings again soon. And as it turns out, the deputy sheriff, the new deputy sheriff, was also looking at that, too, of forming a policy. So it's very timely, and I think things will go a little faster.
Thanks, Annie. Leslie, did you have your hand up?
I did. I had my hand up. Anna, thank you for that, and Annie as well. One of the things that I have said at WDIC and throughout the county is that it's often what people look at is demographics of the entire sort of residency of the county. And what I ask folks to do as we think about it as best practice is how do the numbers look within the county government, within our hiring, if we were to use sort of the same metrics as within our hiring practice, if we have 700 employees or 600 employees, are we looking from an affirmative action standpoint that we have 6% people of color as opposed to measuring it against the entire county population because, you know, it doesn't look well. So that's an area that I hope we continue to sort of look at internally more than just bringing in the external factors. So thank you all, and thank you all for holding it down in my absence. Much appreciated.
All right. Thank you very much, all of you. Housing and Economic Development Committee. This would be Anna Keller's chair.
You know, it's funny. My report is shorter for my own committee than Leslin's committee because it was such an amazing meeting and very heated. Thank you for all of the others. Very briefly, we had a robust conversation. I felt like a teacher. I assigned homework to committee members to read, I wish I could assign it to all of you as well, but I'll just recommend it. There's this amazing report from our Department of Planning and Sustainability called the Vibrant Communities Report. It is inspiring. And this shows how much of a dork I think I've become, or maybe always was, about housing and what makes a vibrant community. And one figure I will share from it, which is when you have focused development areas and you focus the development in those areas, the cost of developing housing compared to the cost of developing housing outside those focused development areas, the development outside those focused development areas can be 40 to 400 times more expensive, not to the developer, but to the taxpayer, because you have to extend the roads, extend the water and sewer into those areas, and then maintain them. That's a public cost. But if you do the development inside those focused development areas, not only do you get the vibrant communities, but the impact on the taxpayer is significantly less. So that is one big take home I'll throw out at you. I highly encourage you to read that report. The areas that we will be focusing on this year obviously housing. We will continue with the home rule. We will be also looking at drawing a total blank on the other two major components. Not water and sewer, because that was peak. Come on, Annie, help me out. Oh, thank you. Workforce development is another one that I really want to focus on this year. It's not something we have focused on in the past as much. We haven't had the chance because the committee's been so full. So we will be working closely with the Tompkins County Area Development Agency that we have contracted out to do that work. We've spoken to them briefly, and they look forward to working with us on that topic. So those are two main ones. And if anyone else has anything else to add, but here's to a good year. And that is my last report for the evening.
Thank you, Anna. Annie, you had your hand up?
I was just also going to add about one suggestion I had to look at was tiny homes as far as infill, affordable housing.
In the housing category, absolutely.
In the whole housing thing area, take a look at.
Leslie?
Chair, please, you all forgive me. I failed to mention something that I think is extremely important. I do want to thank Henry for bringing the resolution for hoisting of the African diaspora flag. It was well received and well noticed in the black community here in Tompkins County. Just today, someone burst into my office, just bright-eyed with excitement, and I'm thinking they're bringing me, you know, some money for my capital campaign. And, but just wanted to say they had just left DSS and saw the Pan-African flag hanging on the flagpole and was just overjoyed. And they wanted me to know about it, that it was there. So, you know, I did say thank you. So thank you, Henry, for that recognition. It did not go unnoticed. There's a sense of inclusion and belonging with the sight of that.
Thank you, Leslie. That's great. Great to hear. All right. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. The Public Safety Committee met on February 21st. We had a good discussion on our consensus goals for 2019. We also had an extended discussion about a resolution on driver's licenses, regardless of immigration status. I'd be glad to take about 20 minutes to talk to everybody about it, if there's more you want to hear. we'll move on. We also had a presentation by our undersheriff on drug detection training, and clearly this is something we're going to need to think about more as New York State is moving on with considering legalization of marijuana. The states that have addressed this have seen more driving under the influence, and the ability to test for it is pretty limited. There are some systems under development to try to figure out how to do a chemical test of some kind that can determine actual impact of marijuana. The problem with marijuana is that it stays in your system for, I believe, up to 30 days. So you can't really tell if somebody's under the influence or not. But certainly we want to make sure that our drivers are safe and pedestrians and everybody who's around our roads. So the way you do it at present is with a drug detection expert, and this is somebody who's specially trained on a whole range of metrics of observation and testing to determine whether somebody is under the influence, and they can also determine what kind of drugs the person is using. We have one person in the sheriff's office who's currently qualified. This appears to be a big issue in the state, no surprise. The committee talked about the need to up our game dramatically and to try to figure out how to get as many of our deputies through the training as possible. So it was a really good discussion on that issue. We'll be meeting again on March 21st. We'll have a report from the reentry coordinator on the 2018 results of that ATI program. And I also anticipate David Sanders coming in to talk about our ATI metrics and how we're measuring performance in across all of them, and to give a report on the ATI programs generally.
Thank you, Rich. Any questions? Mike Lane.
Rich, I'm really glad to hear that there's discussion about being able to have our deputies spot some of the driving while under the influence of drug rather than alcohol. Alcohol, we have the screening devices and the breathalyzers, but nothing for so many drugs that are out there. I've talked about this in, even back when I was on public safety, that we need to do more, and we're constantly told it's terribly expensive training. It takes a long time to train an officer. What if we bring somebody here and set up a course for several of our officers?
It was brought up.
Instead of having to send them to Arizona or wherever they do that. I think it's important. I just wanted to read something that I just saw in the latest AAA, American Automobile Association magazine, their concerns about the possible legalization of marijuana and how it'll affect driver safety. They say that that research done by the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety finds that in Washington State, the percentage of fatal crashes involving drivers who recently used marijuana had more than doubled from 8% to 17% 1 year after the state legalized the drug for recreational use. This translates in 1 in 6 drivers involved in fatal crashes testing positive for active THC, the ingredient in marijuana that causes impairment. So something we're going to have to be very, very vigilant about.
Yeah, Mike, you're absolutely correct. The training is in stages. There's the, I think it's a three-step process, and it is fairly expensive. The course itself is not. It's all the travel and staying overnight somewhere. And given the demand that will be present in New York State all at once if marijuana legalization comes to pass, we did have a good discussion about that specific issue of could we bring the training here.
Great.
Yeah.
Henry.
Also, Mike, when Colorado passed the law, they also beefed up their training to a great extent. They increased the number of cops who could detect things and everything else. And so we're also arguing with New York State that they should do the same thing and not spend the money in the subway. They should spend the money back in, I know, many other counties, and there's an ISAC also saying the same thing, that we need money for training and other resources to help combat the bad side of legalization.
You're right. I just hope they don't charge it to our sales tax.
Personally, I think that might come. The training ought to come out of the revenue from marijuana and still fund the subway repairs. So, Rich, were you going to say something?
I was just going to echo that the one of the interesting parts of the state discussion about marijuana legalization is this money's been spent several different ways already, and it usually bypasses the specific issues that will be really acute from legalization, and that we need to be vigilant and speak up very clearly, I believe, if it becomes legalized and the money is not used first to make sure that we have a safe and thoughtful approach to marijuana legalization. So it's not just public safety, but it's also the issue of helping people who are misusing the drug, helping them to get services and to deal with it. That should be the first focus, I believe, of any tax revenue with subways and all the other important things we'd love to spend money on coming secondary to that.
Thank you, Rich. Any other discussion? All right. Thanks very much. Can I get a motion on the minutes of February 19th, 2019? Shauna moves, seconded by Annie. Any comments, discussion? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Can I get a motion to adjourn? Moved by Amanda, seconded by Rich. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? Thank you. Have a good evening. We're adjourned.